No, we had to revise our nursery policy.
We did.
Uh-oh.
A child came with an emotional support guinea pig to the nursery.
What?
And asked if they could bring it inside.
We opted for no, by the way.
Okay. Yeah, like, so where is the line here?
Of, like, support animals?
Yeah.
I don't know. But it's not like, guinea pigs.
Wherever it has, humanity, Americans have crossed it long ago.
Right.
We've blown past whatever is reasonable for a support animal.
I agree.
Are you asking what's reasonable, like, in general, or what's reasonable in our nursery?
In our nursery, what's reasonable? And also, like,
I don't know where
legally,
the line is.
What do we have to do? Like,
I don't think we have anything legally.
If it was a true trained service animal.
If a child comes in that is blind and has a seeing eye dog, the dog can be like, we'll figure it out.
Right.
Yeah, but what if they have a seeing eye guinea pig?
That's not a thing.
But what if it were?
It perches on their shoulder like chitters.
Left.
Right.
It like tugs on its ears.
It's like a little ratatouille.
Yes, exactly.
A guinea piggy tooie.
Yeah.
Guinea tooie.
All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff. With me, as always, Pastor Jay Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
Or not with me, as always. Finally with us, as always.
Finally back.
Finally.
And
look
Alicia McCarter.
Up today.
Here I am, friends.
Still here, still pretty successful.
Welcome back, Pastor David,
hey,
to the
thank
studio.
You. God, yeah, the newly redone studio. It's so fresh in here.
It feels so exciting today.
Yeah.
We haven't seen each other
so much
in months.
Energy.
It's been a while since the three of us. And we're back in the studio.
And we're
now,
back
my
in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not like trying
happening.
Not to fall over backwards in that weird broken chair in your office.
I liked getting to take my life into my hands for the one episode that I recorded in that chair.
Yeah.
It's not my chair, so it's fine.
Yeah.
Okay, so we got our pleasantries out of the way.
That's right. Enough of this foolishness.
Right. Yeah. Now we can be mad at each other.
Why are we mad at each other?
I don't know. So we got them out of the way.
Well, you know, we did our greetings. Everybody's, you know, excited, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
Are you guys mad at me?
Hopefully we did not lose all of our listeners.
I have a list
interim.
Of grievances.
we now have months. Negative listeners. Yeah. No, you guys did a great job. We were joking before recording that I was listening to the podcast while I was on sabbatical, and y'all did a wonderful job. Yeah,
it
it's a really
like
fun
you
episode.
Shouldn't do that while you're on sabbatical. I feel like you need a vacation from all of it, including us.
But it's a content that I enjoy.
Okay.
I enjoy listening to y'all's take on faith and whatnot.
Okay.
You know, Dobson died, and I wanted to hear what Beyond
he
Sunday had
die,
to say.
Yes,
and
we had a lot to say about it.
You did. It was a good episode.
We had to record that episode twice.
I heard.
So we really like it. Our opinions
really,
were real.
You really felt it.
Yeah.
It's hard to say which one was the better recording. Probably the first one.
Yeah. Definitely the first
one. It
was
more organic, right? You
know, yeah, it always is. Yeah.
So anyway, let's get to our news story.
Okay.
Coming from Austria.
Oh.
Not Australia.
Yes, very different.
Good day, mate.
Right. Not that one.
Sound of Music.
Sound of Music.
Yeah.
There, we've got some nuns on the run.
Oh, I saw this.
This is like Sound
it.
Of Music.
I love it, yes.
Where are the nuns running to?
Three nuns in their 80s
love this.
Were put in an elder care home, and then they escaped.
Power to them.
Back to the convent.
To go back to their convent.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think their convent kind of was falling apart. But they were like, we don't want to be here. We don't want to die and then just nursing home. We want to.
If we're going to die, we're going to die in our convent.
Yes.
Right.
So nuns on the run. What do you call a nun on the run?
Nuns on the run.
I think you call it that.
I call it a Roman Catholic.
Okay.
All right. He's got a list. How many you got? How many you got of these? How much time did you spend?
This is a long list.
These?
Yeah, I wanted to make sure I had enough puns and jokes to kind of get in there.
Some nun puns.
Yes.
All right. What else you got? They're Roman Catholic. What else?
Yeah.
All right. Well, the crime is escaping, right? But what is the nunishment?
The nunishment.
Okay.
All right. Let's see. So these nuns worked for years at this convent, and they broke out of their elder care home.
Where, was
Which
there
is
like
awesome.
They had
this
they
is
had
awesome.
Formal
was there, like,
former
involved
former pupils
Ooh,
former yeah. students from their school come and help them break out a locksmith. Yeah,
this has Hollywood Thriller written on. Like this
it
is like
does.
Sister Act 3 right
yeah.
here. This break the sisters is, out of the convent.
Like, one of them was using a walker too. Like it was a big undertaking.
Sure,
right?
An undertaking.
An undertaking. Yeah.
That's who you get to bury the nuns when they die, the Undertaker.
They've developed some bad habits.
That's a good one. Yeah,
yeah. I got that one here. I got a version.
I thought of it already.
I wasn't reading over his shoulder.
Yeah, so I think we need to go figure out what happened here.
Does the Pope get involved when nuns run away?
I hope so.
But we do need to go figure out what goes on there. We need to, you know, break in, dress up, go nundercover.
Yeah, yes. Sure. Nundercover boss.
Yeah. So that's what you must have to do. And they'll be none the wiser when you do that as well. Yes.
Yeah, sure. You think if they did like an undercover boss, if like the head nun...
If the Pope has to dress up?
No, like the head nun has to like dress up as like a... regular.
I don't know. How can you tell the difference?
I don't know. That's what I was trying to figure out.
We're the same thing.
I did read the Pope was going to dress up like a nun and go undercover, but he decided to kick the habit. So, yes.
I don't think the papacy likes when popes dress as nuns.
Probably not.
I don't think the Catholic Church in general is.
They seem to have some
hang-ups.
Some sensitivities about that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. That's a bunch of nonsense.
Yeah.
Bunch of nonsense.
All right, so
is that all you got?
Did we get through your list?
I think I probably got one or two more there, but you know,
you can slide them in.
One of the nuns
the
did say, "Look, before I die in that old person's home, I'd rather go to a meadow and enter eternity that way," which is really sweet.
Is her convent in a meadow? Has she been living in a meadow?
It's in Austria, so yes.
The whole thing's a meadow.
I've been obedient all my life, but going in the nursing room was just too much. You know, wanting to. Too much to be obedient in the nurse room. So,
you know what?
Late stage rebellion.
I have talked to a lot of people who have been told that they need to go to a nursing home, and they would all agree.
Yes. This makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
All right. There you go. Nuns on the run.
Okay. None the wiser.
None the wiser. Yep. All right.
You didn't get to none of the above.
I didn't get to none of the above. I think it's the only one I miss, but you know.
Yeah.
How to come up with? I didn't want to force it too much.
Right. So, how long did you spend on that list?
Not too long.
did you Google them or just write them down?
Somebody just wrote them down. You know? Roman Catholic, I got from the Google.
That's good.
I found that one. Yeah. That's pretty good. Yeah,
that is good.
All right, let's get to our main. Well, I guess let's before we get to our main topic, I do think it's important we
address the elephant in the room.
What's the elephant in the room?
We got a new room and the elephant's right over there. Do you all not see it? Am I the only one who sees the elephant?
Okay. Behind you. We did have Charlie Kirk's assassination.
Oh, right.
You know,
I forgot that happened after you all recorded. So,
yeah, so we recorded on a Wednesday and then by that evening he had been, or late afternoon, he had been assassinated. So we missed it for last week. We decided ultimately not to talk about it on the podcast. Mm-hmm. I think that basically every Christian ever has kind of given their take on it.
Mm-hmm.
And what would we say that's beyond adding to the noise? Like, I think it's been said.
Yeah.
But we would say it better.
We obviously would say it better.
That we wouldn't.
but I just, you know, real quickly, do you have any thoughts or anything that you'd want to share about this?
I mean, the biggest thing for me is that as Christians, it's okay to say that violence is never okay.
Yeah.
And it's okay to say, I did not agree with anything that Charlie Kirk stood for, right? Like, you can hold those things in tension. You can say, like, he should not have been shot, and I don't think he was a person who is worth any sort of veneration. Like, neither of these things should have happened.
Yeah.
And, I think that's an okay place to be, and it's not an easy or a comfortable place to be, but I think that's an okay place to be.
Yeah, I think for me, like, the shooting and kind of the aftermath of kind of, like, the veneration of Charlie Kirk and like the martyrdom of kind of this whole ordeal has really just like exposed an even greater light on like, I believe like we are living in two very different worlds for media and social media algorithms that we're getting that I think it's very possible for many people out there who are mourning Charlie Kirk, who see him as a martyr or like, this is like an incredibly awful thing for our country and for our young people, have been given a picture of what he does that is very, very different than the picture that I have been given by my media that I consume.
Yeah.
And there is no, and so we both are looking at Charlie Kirk through these lenses that, completely unaware in many ways that the other version even exists.
Yeah.
Like I've seen like when I'm, you know, in seeing kind of the arguments and things about this of like, well, I mean, Charlie Kirk said some pretty hard things, like MLK was an awful guy and the civil rights movement was a mistake black women don't have some black women don't have the brain power to take a white person's spot, you know, like really horrible things, you know, like really, but like the other side has truly no idea that that was ever been said. So like, it's kind of like alarming that the media that other people could be consuming paint a very different picture. And maybe if I would get gotten that picture of Charlie Kirk, I might feel very differently about him as a person or what his message was. But it's really weird. So
Yeah, I think for me, the entire point is that nobody should experience gun violence in public, right? Yeah. Like that's kind of the end of the discussion, right? And the veneration of somebody that I don't see that way can be pretty unsettling to witness, right? Mm. And I also think that there's some validity to people being like, okay, well, what about the political assassination of the Democratic? Candidate a while ago that we didn't really say anything about, you know, and like there's some validity to that, like push pull of like, okay, if this, then this, right?
Yeah.
But overall, again, at the end of the day, regardless of this dude's politics or stance, didn't deserve to get shot. Like,
yeah.
And that's kind of
where I am. I mean, I think in general, Christians, as people have followed Jesus, we should be much more weary of violence of all types, gun violence or other, right? We should be much more weary of violence than we typically are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think that we should use instances like this to reflect on ourselves of like, why am I comfortable with violence towards this and not towards this?
Right.
And what does that mean for me as a person who's, because I can't change the reality of what happened to Charlie Kirk, but I can change how I respond in the future, right? I can change how God is working through me in the ways in which I do or do not carry out acts of violence,
right.
Either physical or otherwise, right? And so what does it mean for us as people of faith to take a stance of, yeah, I absolutely hate what you're saying, but I also don't think violence is going to solve it.
Right.
Yep. Right. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. There we go. Those are our thoughts on on everything there.
All of which has probably been said, but we said it better.
Obviously, yeah. All right, let's get to our main topic from Christianity Today.
All right.
This is by Russell Moore.
I'm just curious. It seems like relevance really dropped out of our friend circle. Did we get in a little tiff?
I will say, I do think under Russell Moore is now the editor-in-chief of
Christianity Today. He's been doing a great job. Yeah.
I do think that they are providing better articles.
Okay. Yeah.
Like,
this was behind a paywall for me, so I haven't read it.
Oh, okay.
Going in blind.
I'll give you my password.
Welcome to my world.
I can tell you everything I didn't learn about Darwinism when I was homeschooled.
Deal. That sounds like fun.
All right. Bearing the lead there. A different kind of Darwinism is winning. Yes.
We hadn't said Darwinism yet.
sorry. Spoilers.
All right. By Russell Moore. So basically... I'll give you the subheading here. In a world conditioned by evolutionary advantage, Christians are called to welcome those who seem naturally selected for failure.
Does that mean you're supposed to welcome stupid people?
Maybe.
That's how that subheading
was. It's
like, this guy was selected for failure, but you're supposed to welcome him anyway. Like, that's
love that stupid neighbor.
You're not that far off.
Whoops. All right, what do we got?
So first we're starting with the Scopes Monkey Trial, 100 years ago.
Yeah, it's been a while. Yeah. I remember learning about
this
that in history class once upon a time.
That guy was teaching evolution in a classroom
in Tennessee.
He wasn't supposed to be. Yep.
And the big debate, big lawsuit happened on, is he allowed to teach evolution?
Right.
So,
which was scientific theory, much more theory at the time than it is now.
Right.
Yeah.
So Russell Moore starts with that and basically says, you know, look, for evangelicals, Scopes was ultimately guilty, but it was a short-term victory linked to long-term defeat.
Yeah, he was not allowed to continue teaching and was fired, I think.
It, you know, ultimately, this is from Russell Moore, it snowballed into the decay of American evangelicalism's external credibility and led to internal vulnerability towards anti-intellectualism, a populist view of science. You know,
okay.
So, and I agree. You know, that I think that typically when you say in certain circles, I'm a Christian, this is a part of the baggage that is attached to this.
Yes.
Anti-science baggage. And that that you're obviously are a young earth Christian. That would mean you believe in a 6,000-ish year old earth.
Right. You're still pretty old.
I mean, it's old to me.
Yeah.
It is old, but is it old enough?
I'm just thinking, you know, when we say young Earth, I'm like, yeah, Earth in its 30s. That sounds like a great time. Like, let's go hang
We're
out.
We're in our prime.
The Earth has entered its dirty 30s.
Dirty 30s.
Flirty and 40.
That's
our
right.
Earth.
Yeah.
So 6,000. I don't know what the rhyming scheme for that.
Yeah. Probably better if we don't try to come up with that.
Yeah.
The lowbrow 6,000.
Lowbrow 6,000.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. So Young Earth, yep.
Yeah. But ultimately, yeah, like that's attached to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so now that's not really what we're talking about. We're not talking about that version of Darwinism. About,
okay.
Russell Moore is not intended to debate evolution right. in this article, and neither am I. And I don't think we really would debate it. You know, we'd probably land on relatively similar points of view.
Yeah.
But a new Darwinism. All right. Here we go. Evolution is the merciless law by which the strong crowd out and kill off the weak. This is, he's quoting this guy, the lawyer of the Scopes Monkey trial.
Oh, okay.
The prosecution lawyer.
Ah.
This is how they view evolution. This is the merciless law by which the strong crowd out and kill off the weak.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and that's why it can't be touched. Not just because of it's wrong, because they were at the 6,000 years old, but this is, in his point of view, the view.
Mm.
And so I think Russell Moore is going to be ultimately kind of arguing maybe this is happening now. That this is kind of the way the world is working. The strong rise to power on the backs mm-hmm. of the weak
sure.
that are unfit to move on to the next, you know, the next cycle of what's going on there. So what do you think about this?
I think that's an interesting observation. I mean, when you look at the natural world, this is always the place where I get into mental gymnastics or mental conflict with evolution in general, is that I do still believe that there's a creator behind it, mm-hmm. right? So I don't think that it was just a chance that an amoeba joined with a thing and became a fish that became a lizard that became a monkey that became a human,
clearly,
right?
Clearly we know how it works in great detail.
I think that's roughly right.
An amoeba joined with a thing that became a fish.
That's roughly the pattern.
Yeah, sure.
Anyway, I think there was a hand of a creator in the process. Now, I don't think the Earth was only 6,000 years old, right? And so, what does that look like for us to understand God as creator, and for there to be this process of evolution through which humanity has been brought into its current existence? And how does it work within the natural world? There's clearly evidence that the natural world has said this is the best trait to survive, and that's what continues, that mm-hmm. strongest trait survives and the weaker trait dies out. And how does that impact humanity that has an ability to be aware that we're doing that, right? Like,
right.
I don't think the natural world, and I don't know a whole lot about the natural world, but I don't think that there's a monkey out there being like, hey, I have the ability to use this tool and that idiot over there doesn't. So I'm going to kill that idiot to make sure that he doesn't, you know, procreate. But there are humans who want to do that. And I think that's where we get into a problem.
Yeah. That's where we're stepping into more social Darwinism versus nature Darwinism.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, in some ways they're not really in conflict for me. Right. But I think that maybe that is kind of the idea behind it, the challenge of the gospel, right, is that, you know, in the face of this kind of maybe natural selection processes, right, mm-hmm. that would, if you just stopped there, would say, okay, only the strong deserve to survive, right? You flip that script and you say, no, everything and everybody has inherent dignity and value. Mm-hmm. And how do we level this playing field and bring up, you know, the disadvantaged to a similar level? Like, but to me, that's more like the gospel, and mm-hmm. that can be a very beautiful interplay between the two, right?
Yeah, I hear that. In some ways, it almost feels like unregulated capitalism versus like
we don't know anything about that
but versus like a capitalism that says like there's a place for a free market and there's an ability within capitalism to support those who need help, like it's not supposed to be just one person gets wealthy on the backs of everybody else,
right?
And so what does that look like to you?
I think he's kind of identifying this, like those, especially amongst Christendom, those like most resistance to like evolution from a scientific standpoint mm-hmm. are like somewhat dabbling in this now social Darwinism mm-hmm. for both whose words deserve to be heard, mm-hmm. the strong, and also like even breaking down into like using biblical text to like support not necessarily a biblical view of gender, but a more caveman view of gender,
mm-hmm.
you know, like that man strong, woman weak, kind of like that's breaking it down. And like, that's not what is ultimately, I don't believe that is what is Christian.
Yeah.
Right.
But they're looking for these now new social Darwinism of like, well, we are the strongest, therefore we deserve to move forward and the weak will be left behind.
Yes.
And then it's a bit of a question of like, well, who are the weak, right? Yeah. And I think that Christians should be asking those questions. And because when we ask in scripture, when Jesus says like, whatever you did for the least of these, we should be asking who are the least of these? Like that should be at the forefront of our mind.
Mm-hmm.
When we think through what policy should be passed by government, what should our church be doing in outreach? Like we should be having those kinds of thought process of like, well, who are the least of these in my community, in my world?
Yeah.
And social Darwinism would say like, no, the least of these are losers.
Yeah.
They're dumb.
Yeah.
Or they're worthless.
Mm-hmm.
And why would we invest resources, time, talent, our taxes to help them?
Yeah.
We should be helping the strong man at the top.
Yeah. Which, I mean, back in the 40s, 50s, and even to some extent today, right? This is the danger of the eugenics movement of saying like, we can, you know, breed the perfect race, the perfect human. We can eliminate all sorts of genetic, what's the word I'm looking for? When a gene does a thing it's not supposed to do.
Abnormalities.
Yeah, genetic abnormalities that result in, you know, mental retardation or disease or whatever. That like, we can just eliminate it and it won't be a part of the human race anymore. And which means eliminating people who are beautiful and worthy of love and all of that stuff as you described earlier, Elise.
Right. So what does a perfect human look like? I think that is also the question, right? Yeah. Like, are we defining it? Like, is God defining it?
Present company, I assume.
Yeah, we're all perfect.
Yeah, we're on the list. Well, I think, you know, that, and this is one of the things I always got into, you know, with psychology as well, is that, you know, there's all these different people who have defined, like, the pyramid of self-perfection or whatever, right? And, like, all of them who came up with their schemes put themselves at the top. And then there are, you know, here are the other steps that you have to do to get to where I am, right?
Right.
And I think eugenicists were often the same way. Like, oh, well, we're obviously right. Like, we're the perfect one. And so here's how we make everybody like
what
me.
What do we look like? That's what the humans should look like.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And so, as long as I am the perfect human, then I have no problem with everybody else should be more like me. But that's ridiculous to think that I am the perfect human because God didn't make one perfect human. God made humanity, and out of humanity comes God's breath, and every single breath that each of us take is God's breath, right? And what does that mean for us to encounter God within every person, regardless of what we think is normal or not normal or beautiful or not beautiful or strong or weak or whatever we see that as? How do we see that as God within this person and treat that person as such?
You know, I think of that sometimes, like, I've heard, we can hear in kind of our social circles or even from our government or politics or our people online, a dehumanization of those on the bottom. And I think that's what we're kind of really seeing from, and I can say, you know, from personal experience, seeing people dehumanize those with autism.
Sure.
Since I have a child with autism, is heartbreaking. Like, it's really, really difficult. And, like, that their life isn't as full as a neurotypical life. That they're not having the same levels of love and that same worthiness of life because they won't be able to do what we consider normal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's really heartbreaking and that's really difficult because I see my son is all, you know, worthy of everything and could never be left behind. But this is what ultimately this social Darwinism kind of leads to is this idea of, and one of the things that that Charlie Kirk has kind of said is like, he hates empathy. And like, but like, that's kind of more of a message that we're kind of seeing in the Christian manosphere kind of message of like, empathy needs to go away because it forces us to look at those losers on the bottom and care.
Right.
And society might flip and change and shift on who are the losers on the bottom, but Christians should be, that's who they think, that's who they should be pursuing uniquely and differently than the world.
Yeah.
And that's maybe the question of the day is how are we doing that as Christians? Mm-hmm. How are we standing up to even other Christians to kind of say like, no, the people on the bottom are just as valuable and important, and they are a reflection of who God is, in some ways better than the billionaires on top.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do we do?
What do we do?
Yeah, well, how do we do that?
I think asking who are the least of these is a good place to start.
Yeah. I read a quote today that it was by a woman, I think Gloria something. Anyway, I don't remember.
Gloria Estefan.
Not that one. Not that Gloria.
Isn't she like a singer or something like that?
I think yeah, so, yeah. A Cuban singer. But it was, I only love God as much as I love my worst enemy. And I thought that was very like,
I don't think it was, sobering. But it sounds very Mother Teresa like.
It wasn't Mother Teresa. I would have remembered that.
It's Gloria Estefan. Yeah.
Gloria Estefan. Yeah. So in the famous words of Gloria Estefan, I only love God as much as I love my worst enemy. anyway, I thought that was, you know, very like sobering and kind of timely, right? Yeah. Like, especially with this discussion too, like it just always like what we say the least of these, right? We bandy that term around a lot in Christianity. And what do we actually mean by that? Like, how do I love the people that I view as being totally different from me? How do I love the people that I don't like? How do I love the people that annoy me? You know, mm-hmm. like, how am I doing that, right? And, you know, I think there's a lot of nuance in that discussion, obviously. Like, the people who have, like, really, really wronged me, I don't necessarily need to make myself super vulnerable for them to continue to wrong me, but I can still love that person. There are still ways to be loving yeah. towards that person.
I think Dorothy Day is who actually said
Dorothy,
that.
Not Gloria.
I think Dorothy Day
is
who said that. Yeah.
But you can see it's close.
Yeah, it's right there.
But you Googled it for us. Yeah. Thank you.
I got your back.
Yeah.
AI's got you.
Oh, no.
Oh, it's just the generative, like, here's who I think. Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. I've got
so
links
to it. So it may or may not be right.
I've got links to support it. I'm pretty confident it was Dorothy Day.
Dorothy Day.
Yeah, for me, I think as a church, we need to be wary in some ways. This sounds weird, like of success, because I think it's easy for us to associate successfulness with godliness. Mm. And like that's a Christian church that's growing, that their podcast gets, you know, hundreds of thousands of views, obviously ours.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. But like that must mean God is moving.
Yeah.
Like that is like. Successfulness must be godliness. So like the pastors who have the most influence are therefore the most godly.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that that's necessarily true, because then one, if success is godliness, then it allows us to ignore moral sure. failings mm-hmm. and tribalism or all these things that kind of come along with it. But because in God's kingdom, like the most usefulness is not a question mark on
right.
are you welcomed or are you valuable. You know, you can have dementia and be valuable. Mm-hmm. You can be bedridden and be valuable. You could, you know, be nonverbal and valuable because those things are not the question that we should be asking about a human being, right? Like you're valuable because you're a human made in the image of God, and not because you contribute to the gross national product of our nation or how much you pay taxes.
Yeah.
That's not value.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this, hopefully Christians can stand counterculture to that.
Mm-hmm.
This is where I think we need to be like the most countercultural of all, of like every human being has dignity and worth.
Mm-hmm.
We need, if we cannot stand there on that island, who could? Like, yeah, you know, yeah. like I don't understand. Why would we expect anybody else to?
Yeah. I think it does get complicated when we look at the biblical witness, right? Particularly when we look at the story of Acts, and we see over and over, right? 3,000 were being saved that day. 5,000 were saved that day. Or Paul preached a sermon, another 500 were baptized that day, right? And I think it's easy for us to look at that and say, oh, numbers are how the Spirit moves. And so then we see a church have numbers, right? Yep, Spirit's moving. That's what happened in Acts, and now what's happening there. And what we forget is that in the story of Acts, it wasn't 3,000 wealthy people were convinced to live comfortably in their life and continue on and started going to this church that made them feel good. It was 3,000 people were convicted to change their lives radically for the better and to care for the poor and the widow and the orphan and the least of these intentionally, right? Like that was what was driving it. And so yeah, I think you can have a church that's growing and being successful when they're doing those things. It cannot be the only marker, I think, is really, really valuable insight.
100%. Yeah. And Jesus' ministry grows and it also falls. You know, like both those things are present. I'm pretty confident Jesus is doing the right thing in the midst of both of them. You know, like
I feel secure in this particular hot take. Right. Jesus did the right thing.
Right. Pro-Jesus.
Yeah. So neither one of them alone is the marker of godliness.
Yes. Right.
Yeah.
Like it is faith, you know, faithfulness to, I think, the message of who Jesus is and also the message of how are we serving the least of these.
Yes.
That is the measure of godliness.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, Because some churches have the exact opposite opinion. Like, we're getting smaller, therefore we are more godly.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. we're all the people who cannot stay committed to our message mm-hmm. and meaning are dropping off. And it's only the faithful few that remain, which I don't think is accurate as well.
Yeah. Neither is a full picture.
Yeah. So I mean.
But we're doing it right, just to be clear.
Yes, we're great.
So, Russell Moore is not.
And beautiful.
And so successful.
So Russell Moore is. Ultimate thing here about a different kind of Darwinism, meaning it's not really a anti-Charles Darwin, thought process or even an anti-evolutionist thought process, but it is saying, he does end with, you cannot serve both God and Darwin. The message of...
That's this Sunday's gospel. Yesterday's gospel as of release day, yeah. You can't serve God and money.
Oh, okay.
Not God and Darwin.
Interesting. Yeah. Wow.
I bet they're like, who's this Darwin guy?
Right.
Like, trust me. Christians about 2,000 years.
They're going to love this.
You're going to be really, really intrigued.
It's going to be a real hot topic a while from now.
So that's not mean you can't be an evolutionist and a Christian.
Right.
But I do think you have to check yourself if the least of these make... Like, if you have no desire to serve the least of these, can you be a Christian?
Yeah.
And I think that is a reasonable question. And, I don't know the answer to.
At no point does God say, you know what? Widows and orphans, just, they don't deserve it. Just let them
die. Forget about them.
Over and over, God says, care for them. Leave things for them. Make it possible for them to survive because they have value and worth in my eyes. Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
God says it more eloquently than that, but
I think so. Yeah.
Over the course of many books.
All right, that's all I've got.
All right, well, hey, if you enjoyed this episode, you can find all of our episodes at beyondsundaypodcast.com. And of course, you can send us an email and let us know what you think about Darwinism or young Earth. What was the Earth doing in its 30s? We want to know what you think. You can send it to beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com.
Another wonderful episode.
Oh boy. Anymore? Real quick.
Nah, that's good.
Okay.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.